What's going on, everybody? Pete Jensen and Rob Reese back with you for Mock Draft 2.0 edition of NHL Fantasy on Ice. We're about 2 weeks away from the start of the season, Robbie, and we got two nice guests here to round out our expanded mock draft show for the prime fantasy time of year. What's up, buddy?
Prime time, Petey. We're dialed in the Fantasy Mock 2.0. You can look at it at nhl.com/fantasy. It's changed a little bit, actually, since Mock 1.0. Some injury trends, a couple preseason things of note, and we are alongside waiver wire James Harding and David Satriano. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thanks. You know, I'm not only am I happy to be here, I'm glad we got James, because you know how hard it was to do a draft with just three of us, four teams each? I mean, geez, at least now we got a fourth guy, only had to focus on three teams. So I'm glad James is along here.
I'm glad I was able to come in and alleviate that for you, Davey. And yeah, guys, it's great to be back on. It's been way too long.
For sure. And James, of course, will be joining us during the season for his trademark waiver wire segments. You could already hit the waiver wire if you did your draft a little early, but we're starting with Mock Draft 2.0 here. I think one of the highlights of the first two rounds, guys, beyond the obvious, was that James actually was able to stack two Florida Panthers, the two best guys, Barkov and Huberdeau. He took Huberdeau at 9 and Barkov at 16, which I think, James, like, that's a real strategy that's feasible for people to go out there and take the two best players from arguably the most attractive fantasy team in the whole land, right, bud?
Yeah, I was really not expecting the two of them to fall to me there. When you saw how the first round kind of broke, I was at that 9th pick. Pasternak went right before that, and you had guys like Marchand and Kane and Makar still on the board, and Brady Tkachuk also. And I just said, you know, there's a chance, looking at how the board stacked up, that if I take Huberdeau here, I might be able to get Barkov on the wraparound. And if not, there's still going to be a lot of really, really good players available, you know, in the top 20. So I figured I'm very high on Florida this year. I have them as probably one of the four or five favorites to win the Cup, maybe in one of the top three favorites to win the Cup outside of Tampa Bay and Colorado. So I decided to roll the dice and go with Huberdeau. I think he's going to have a big year there, and the ability to stack the two of them, because they will, I think, still play a little bit at even strength. But the real big thing is going to be the power play time together, where they're just such a lethal combination.
I think there's a couple more stack scenarios that you could get away with round 1-2, maybe a Matthews Marner type situation, a Panarin Zibanejad type situation. And I just want to say, disclaimer here, that it is very aggressive to go for a stack like James did, but the reward is so high if it pays off. And I think a team like Florida, we can all agree on this panel, is entering that really safe territory in the NHL. This is not a scenario from last year where you're taking a Vancouver Canuck like Pettersson and then Hughes, or one of those situations where Vancouver was due, I think, for a little regression. I think Florida has a really high ceiling, and in fantasy, there's really no bad angle to go from. So hats off to James for making that happen in rounds 1 and 2.
Right. And I was actually able to stack players from the other Florida team, which I thought was interesting. I wasn't planning it like James was, but I got Kucherov, I think 5 or 6. And then I got Victor Hedman in the second round. So I think when you can do that, it even adds another layer, could be even more valuable when you get two guys from the same safe elite team, and then you get them at different positions. Like if you got MacKinnon and then Makar somehow, or Makar and Rantanen on the wraparound, which seemed feasible based on where they went in this mock. So yeah, those are the few teams, right, that you would consider doing that from. I remember a couple of years ago, I did it with Pittsburgh. Even though they made the playoffs, it didn't really pay off. I had like Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel at the time. It just wasn't worth it. But two guys from a very safe team, you could also say the Rangers, if you're expecting them to take a big step forward, you could either go Panarin with Fox or Panarin with Zibanejad. I would probably go Panarin or Zibanejad with Fox. That would be my preference. What do you think, Davey?
I agree with you there. That's the way I would go. And I was just looking at my fourth team. I took Vasilevsky with the 4th overall pick. Then I took Kirill Kaprizov. Sorry, and I drafted four stars. I had Seguin, Radulov, Gurianov, and Robertson. So I really hope that Dallas is not injured and has a good season on that team, because I see you shaking your head. I agree with you there. I should not have drafted four of them. Maybe two of them. Robertson's fine, rookie of the year, top six, but four. That to me, that team. I think I kind of just panicked a little bit towards the end, and four is a lot, especially for one team. And just to me, I think I made a mistake there after my first three picks.
Well, I think that's the exact argument against going for stacks early, is because you get into a bind late in drafts where some of those guys, Davey, the Dallas guys are attractive in the middle rounds. They are, right? Because that team is due to have a bounce back this season. But when you kind of make your bed, let's say with the Florida Panthers, James, I also saw on that same team, you ended up stacking, I think it was Aho with Turbo from the Carolina Hurricanes. So not only are your chips in on the Florida Panthers, they're also in on the Carolina Hurricanes, who I think the analytics community is a little bit unsure of heading into this season. So I think, Davey, you bring up a good point. Like, it's a fair warning where you have to know what you're doing and you have to go full commitment. I don't like to do that in fantasy. I think this season is going to be my most conservative in terms of category coverage players and then trying to diversify my lineup from as many teams as possible. Because remember, gentlemen, there are game nights like Wednesdays when there's only a few games on the slate. There's those off nights where you need to have some guys in action. You can't just load up on these flashy teams because they don't play every single night. And I think that goes hand in hand with the tandem strategy as well. You just need to know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, I had a couple of stacks there. I did on that one team. I stacked Barkov and Huberdeau for the power play stack. And then I had Aho with Teravainen. And then on my number one team, the one that had the first overall pick where I had McDavid, I actually got Anze Kopitar as my number two center. And then later on in the draft, I actually took Victor Arvidsson, hoping for the potential stack there as well. I have Arvidsson as kind of a re-breakout guy this year, probably somewhere 30 to 40 goals if he's able to play with Kopitar for the entire season. So those are also the kind of things that you have to kind of think like two or three steps ahead. It's a, you know, if you're taking a Connor McDavid, if you're taking, you know, a top player like an Austin Matthews or you know, an Anze Kopitar who's still a top 50 player, you might be able to get their line mate 4, 5, 6 rounds down the road. You know, I got Arvidsson very late, but you know, if you're taking Connor McDavid at one, you might be able to get Zach Hyman somewhere in like the 7th or 8th round, because there's the thinking that he's going to just be permanently put on McDavid's wing. So, you know, just because you don't get that top level stack right there, like I got with a few of those teams, doesn't mean that down the line, you can't still get a few really solid stacks with a top center and then a winger that you get somewhere in the late single digit rounds or the early teens.
Right. And you can also get, like in the case of Kaprizov, you're the best case scenario, I think, for fantasy wise, for value speaking. You get Kaprizov in the 2nd or 3rd round, and then you take Marco Rossi late, hoping that, or Joel Eriksson Ek, hoping one of those two guys pans out. Rossi, of course, is a high upside dark horse rookie that you could probably get in one of the last rounds of your draft. And Joel Eriksson Ek didn't go in this 12 team mock draft at all, but. And I think the same case with Panarin. Like we have Kaprizov for 80 points, which in his second season suggests he would take another step forward, which is definitely possible. Panarin we have for 100 points. And with Panarin, you could get probably like 125 or later Ryan Strome, his frequent line mate. And then all of a sudden you're not making as much of an investment, like James said, but you could still get that return if Ryan Strome hits like 65, 70 points. So yeah, that's a really good strategy, probably a better one than say taking with your first two picks, Pasternak and Marchand from the same Bruins team that might decline a little tad, and then you could really hurt, you know, you could take a hit from that.
So I want to, before we get to the middle rounds here, talk about goalies in the 2nd round. This one was pretty interesting. We had James take Darcy Kemper 20th overall, which was actually the 2nd goaltender off the board behind the obvious number one choice, Andre Vasilevsky of the Lightning. Then we saw Connor Hellebuck go. Petey, you took him 23rd, which I think is tremendous. And then James, you took another goalie at the end of round two in Robin Lehner. So Davey, this question's for you. Do you have a strong number two goalie in fantasy this season? And should it be Connor Hellebuck?
The answer to both of those questions is yes. I think Hellebuck's number two. He's always been number two. He won the Vezina. He had the one down year. Last year, he was great. We know every single year he's going to lead the league in probably starts, definitely shots and shots against. He's always up there in save percentage. To me, I know people are saying Kemper's the number two goalie because he's on Colorado. They're a great team. I know Kemper's save percentage and everything's been great, but something's just telling me that I don't know if he's maybe not going to get the full-time role. You know, Francois was injured, and now he's back healthy. He played with Grubauer when they were healthy together as a tandem. I just don't feel like Kemper. Something is telling me that picking him this early as a number two is not going to pan out. I just feel like I know it's Colorado, but we saw last year when they got Devin Dubnyk from the Sharks, right? Everyone was like, oh, pick this guy up, sneaky upside. And what, he had like a goals against average of 4 and, you know, won maybe one or two games. So everything's not always roses when you're a goalie on Colorado. I feel like, to me, Kemper is definitely top 5, but after Vasilevsky, Hellebuck is number 2 for sure. And then I'd probably say Robin Lehner is taken before Kemper. And the main reason is because Laurent Brossoit, he was backing up Hellebuck, and now he's backing up Robin Lehner. But Lehner doesn't really have to worry about the flurry. He's the starter. He's not going to split time. He may have a game or two off. To me, Vasilevsky 1, Hellebuck 2, Robin Lehner 3. And I actually think Varlamov, to me, would be number 4. Even though he'll split, the numbers are always going to be great. And then I have Darcy Kemper, to me, rounding out the top 5 right there.
Nice.
I wouldn't necessarily say that Kemper is my number one goaltender. Obviously, Vasilevsky is number one. But I actually am picking Kemper to win the Vezina this season. So at that point in the draft, wanting to have a top-tier goaltender, I felt that the risk was necessary for Kemper to come off the board there, because I think outside of Vasilevsky, Lehner was on the board there too. I was kind of debating between the two of them, but I just think that if he can stay healthy, which is just the biggest question with him, but I think as long as he's healthy, we saw what he did on bad Coyotes teams the last few seasons. With a Colorado team like that in front of him, I think the sky's the limit.
That's very bold, James. If you're going to take Kemper, it's Kemper, not Kemper, for Vezina, at least get his name right, number one. Number two, Robbie, when was the last time you saw a goaltender win the Vezina when he misses 50 games due to injury?
Well, I think in this point in the draft, that's the number one concern is when you're actually up in your real fantasy league and Kemper's name is available, it looks attractive. But when you actually make the selection, you need to have that safety net. And I think to Davey's point, that's what Connor Hellebuck brings. Even with Robin Lehner, as the panel suggested, like there are still questions about that player and can he be that permanent number one volume guy? We're not sure of that. And you kind of hate to be cherry picking too many players in fantasy, even though this is just a mock draft, you still want to have some safety if it's a second, first, or third round pick, in my opinion.
I look at the defenses with these guys, and that's how I kind of base my decision. I mean, I think like I wanted to see what my roster would look like taking Hellebuck as in the second round. But I mean, like they added in the offseason Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt, two solid guys, not two guys that will put them over the top to win the cup, but they'll add some support to Connor Hellebuck's case. For Colorado's defense, I would say I'm a little concerned. Now Devon Taves is banged up. They don't have Ryan Graves anymore. They do have Eric Johnson back, but Eric Johnson's like an injury risk at any given moment. I love the player. I hope he could be healthy, and I hope he could help Colorado, you know, finally get over the hump in that second round for all the times we've praised them over the years. But yeah, the Colorado defense is not as much of a sure thing as it was, say, last year. Bowen Byram was solid at some points, and he was a weak link at some points last year as a rookie in sporadic playing time. And then, of course, Vegas, like that's why we have Leonard ranked number two. I think he's the safest. It's the opportunity he's been waiting for many years to be the surefire, clear number one starter. And he returns his full defense, right? Petrangelo, Shea Theodore, and Alec Martinez re-signed. So I think Vegas, like that solidified defense, that's why we have Leonard ranked number two in our top 250, if you notice that.
I guess what I would throw out there then is why maybe not wait until round four, say, where you can get Marc-Andre Fleury, you can get Shesterkin, and you could get Talbot, and still, I think, be okay with them as your number one goalie in fantasy, as long as you invest in another goalie, say, maybe two or three rounds later. I might this year shy away from the Laners and the Kempers. Hellebuck, I'd be all over if I can get him late two, early three for sure. But I think that's where that debate starts. Now, shifting away from the goalie position, I think round four is when things really get interesting in fantasy, because there's always guys that can kind of break out. And Nick Ehlers, though he played at a point per game last season or 1 point shy of it, I think that's a guy, James, at number 40 overall, I'd really like to key in on, because let's keep in mind, though he was 46 points in 47 games last season, which is really good, he wasn't on the first power play consistently throughout the entire season. So that's a player that, yes, he kind of broke out points wise, but I think he has an even higher ceiling this year. And I love the value there of 40.
Yeah, he's, in my opinion, going to be the guy there in Winnipeg now. When you look at what they have going on, him and Kyle Connor, they still have Blake Wheeler there, but obviously, you know, he's getting into his mid to late 30s. We have to see how they're going to deploy Dubois this season. You know, they played him primarily as a winger for most of last year, and I think that he definitely has his most success when he's able to be a distributor and a center. So it's going to be interesting to see if they shift him back to center this season, and then where they stack up there. Is it still going to be, Scheifele on that top line with Wheeler and Connor? And then is it going to be Dubois centering Ehlers? Or are they going to start shifting around? Don't forget, I think Scheifele has a one or two game suspension from the playoffs to start the season. So maybe Dubois gets a few games at the top on that first line with Connor and Wheeler. And they kind of click and find some chemistry there. So, you know, that's a very, very sneaky deep team. But when you just look at the progression that Ehlers has had over the last few seasons, he really has been just that quiet building superstar player. And I think that he's poised just for a huge breakout this season. I mean, he went from, 204 shots, 231. The COVID shortened season, he was at 158 through 62. So he was going to hit 200 shots again, 62 games. And then, the COVID shortened season, 203 in 71 games. And then he was 148 in 47 games. So, you know, he's a shot magnet. And he's definitely, I think, on pace this season, I'm going to say 70 plus points.
So speaking of round four, Robbie, you took Elias Pettersson on one of your teams. I'm just wondering, was there any thought to maybe try to wait on that pick, or just, you know, he's not signed. He's clearly missed camp. He's missed the preseason game. We don't know if he'll miss any of the season. Do you think, was there anything in your mind that said, hey, I'm getting him at 46, you know, he's going to sign at some point. So fourth round, this is a great spot for him? Or
no, I mean, I'll say this. I'm not a big preseason guy, number one. I don't put stock into, let's say, Christian Dvorak having a 4-point game for the Montreal Canadiens in the preseason. It doesn't do anything for me. No, nor do the line combinations until late preseason or game one of the regular season, right? So with Pettersson's contract situation, that's something I'm not thinking about at that point. What I'm thinking about late round four, when I'm up and I see Elias Pettersson on the board, that is a player that every single time he's on the ice, it's a highlight reel. He's doing a backhand sauce pass. He's going bar down. There's always something going on. And to kind of go back to this point earlier about teams that are due to take a step forward, Vancouver is probably the number one team on my board that should have a big leap this year. Connor Garland's going to make an immediate impact. OEL is going to make an impact on their blue line. Quinn Hughes should get signed too. That should be a done deal. And then Thatcher Demko I have is one of my top breakout candidates for this season. So Pettersson available at that point, I absolutely have no qualms about. And I'll say this, Davey, I mean, last year you would have to take Pettersson probably in the second round, you know, based on hype. So to get him late four because of one average year, sign me up any day for that in fantasy.
Right. And Pettersson has definitely bulked up a little bit since his rookie year where he was, he was just a kid, but now he's been through the rigors of the playoffs one year. Last year went through some adversity, of course, dealt with injury, coming back stronger here. As long as he signs and Quinn Hughes signs, I'm all on board with Robbie for the Vancouver bounce back to get into the playoffs. I'm not saying they're going to be anywhere near Vegas in the standings as the second best team. I still think Edmonton's in that mix. I'm interested to see. We loved the start from the Kraken the other day. Like, where are the Kraken going to stack up with a team like Calgary or a team like LA or Edmonton even? Like, is their defense more shored up than a lot of those teams? And therefore they can, you know, neutralize the scoring of Edmonton when they play teams like that or Calgary's top six. So yeah, the Kraken are like the biggest question mark for me in that division. But Vancouver, I think when it's all said and done, will finish ahead of the Kraken and will make the playoffs as probably the second or third best team in that favorable Pacific division. So, yeah, they just got to get Pettersson and Quinn Hughes signed, and then they'll be all systems go for the bounce back.
Yeah, I think that In that round, one of the interesting things was you saw the run on the goaltenders at the beginning of the round, and then it completely died off. And then in round five, we saw six goaltenders go in the 10 picks, including I took Grubauer on one of my teams, and I later on got Chris Driedger to get the handcuff there. But I think getting back to, you know, Robbie's point from a few minutes ago, you know, wouldn't you rather wait for a guy like a Fleury or a Shesterkin or a Talbot? In my opinion, I wouldn't, because there's still a lot of question marks about all three of them. Fleury obviously is going to a weaker defensive team. Shesterkin, I'm still not 100% sold on that. You know, he's the guy for the Rangers, because that is, you know, they're a bad defensive team. You know, they played some fairly weak competition in a lot of his games, both last season and his rookie year. So, you know, a full season now on that team is kind of more of a prove it guy for me. And Talbot, I'm still not sure that he's going to be able to replicate what he did last season. And I know later on I stole Kaapo Kähkönen from Pete in one of the later rounds, and he texted me cursing at me because he wanted the handcuff there to secure that. But, you know, I think that back to what we were saying earlier, when you see these two rounds where we have nine goaltenders go in 20 picks, this is why you go early at a guy like Vasilevskiy or Hellebuck or Kemper or Lehner, because you don't want to be caught in a situation like this where now you're fighting for the next tier down of these guys. A lot of them, I don't think really going to pan out. I wouldn't take Frederik Andersen in the top 10 rounds right now, just because I don't trust the player at all. I think he's in at the end of the year going to end up being benched behind Antti Raanta. I wouldn't trust taking a guy like Freddie Andersen that high.
I got to counter that real quick. Freddie Andersen is one of the safer names in fantasy over the last five to seven seasons.
Worse every year.
The Maple Leafs have gotten worse every year defensively.
And the Hurricanes just got worse.
I think, but here's my point. And I think what it comes down to draft stock. Okay, on that team, and I will credit you, James, because I did get myself into one of those situations where I was fighting for goalies. I took Samsonov and Demko on one team, and I need at least one of them to break out. And it could be that neither of them do. So there is that caveat. But for Freddie Andersen, like, that to me is still a safe name. And Davey, the Hurricanes are still a safe team. Even if they take a little step back, what does that mean? Just shy of the President's Trophy, right? And if Freddie Andersen's getting 60% of starts, he's going to be a top 50 guy in fantasy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I took Vasilevskiy fourth overall. You guys have done way more drafts than me, but I don't think I've seen him gone that. I've seen him gone in the first round. I haven't seen him personally gone fourth overall. In that run of goalies, Pete in the fifth round took Spencer Knight. I think that's a great pick. It's obviously a reach, but hey, Bobrovsky is, we've seen him struggle. Knight was great. So that could be, this guy could be rookie of the year easily this year. So I think that was a great pick. Going back to the Hurricanes, I'm kind of in the same boat as James. I don't really like Anderson too much, but I just feel like it's also the injuries are still a concern with him. But to me, I said, you know what? I'm not going to take a Carolina goalie, but I'm going to take their former goalie. So in one of the later rounds, in the 10th round, I got Alex Nedeljkovic. I got Alex N from the Detroit Red Wings. They've improved a bit. I know they're not great, but we saw what Bernier did for them last year, right? And the rookie of the year last year, I think this is a great pick personally at number 10. I think he's going to do great for them. I don't know what you guys think, but I took Nedel there, and I thought that 10th round, you know, as a second or third goalie on that team, that was pretty good.
We're on year four, and Davey still cannot pronounce this guy's name. I think you do it on purpose, Davey. I really do. Is this on purpose? Is this a little bit of a shtick from you?
No, I'm not great with names. You know how long it took me for Merzlikins, but hey, I got that down. It took a while. I got that. So
I want to say, I think Bob, our producer, is wearing a Red Wings shirt right now, which is terribly ironic for this topic. But Petey, like going back to earlier, like when we don't want to read too much into preseason injuries and lines, Larkin is banged up apparently still. We've heard that. Jakub Vrána hurt his shoulder in the first 10 minutes on the ice after having visa issues trying to get into the country. Detroit, if they don't have a healthy Larkin and a healthy Vrána, Nedeljkovic is not going to do anything. You're sitting here telling me that Carolina is susceptible on defense, and you're bragging about getting Nedeljkovic from the Detroit Red Wings later in the draft. I just have to say, reality check here. Detroit is still not a playoff contender, no matter what. They should be a little bit better this season than last. But Petey, I mean, if you're telling me Larkin might miss some time potentially and have a lingering injury concern, and same with Vrána, there's no way I'm drafting a Detroit Red Wing player in fantasy this season.
Right. And that's kind of why I got into the mix on the run on goalies. Like, if you look at the surface, like, I would never take Cam Talbot as high as I did in this mock. But when I looked at him compared to all the 1A or 1B guys or guys that were not on teams as safe, I mean, Detroit, of course, is nowhere near a safe team, nor is Philly. On that team where I got Cam Talbot, at least, you know, the second pick, I got Jack Campbell as my number two. Fairly safe, had a breakout season last year, should replicate it to an extent. And then later rounds, I got Carter Hart as my third goalie. But I was not thrilled with that team because my plan was to get, you know, Kakanen to solidify that tandem. So then I'd have a top five tandem with Talbot and Kakanen, and then I'd have Jack Campbell. I'd feel a lot better going to sleep at night with a trio like that compared to going to the well with Carter Hart for a still shaky defense, or Nedeljkovic. So, like, those are the guys that you get into that type of neck of the woods if you miss out on the run on goalies. So don't hesitate to reach for a Sorokin. We got a couple of fan questions about that run on goalies. I think at that point, you either go with an upside guy like Spencer Knight or Sorokin, or you go for the safest team left on the board, you know, whether it's like the Islanders with Varlamov or Talbot for the Wild, who should be a playoff team again. So that run on goalies always mystifies all of us. But, you know, at the time I regretted taking Talbot, but now I feel a little bit better about it because of how I address goalies later on in my draft.
Well, I think the thing that you have to remember there too, you know, the Islanders are kind of a special exception because they're really the only team that you're going to try and, you know, get a handcuffed tandem of two goaltenders in the first four or five rounds. You know, everybody else, you're really not looking to do that. And that's kind of the strategy when it comes to goaltenders, especially in the NHL nowadays. Everybody seems to need, you know, two goaltenders, kind of like running backs in the NFL. It seems like every team has two or three running backs in the NFL. Every team in hockey right now has, you know, that number one goaltender, but then they have that 1B. And so it really comes down to just being able to, you know, target the guys that you want to target and be willing to pull the trigger on their backup of a few rounds earlier than you probably think you need to, just so that you can 100% guarantee you're going to be able to secure the handcuff. Because if you have a guy who, you know, has injury concerns like a Fred Anderson or like a Nedeljkovic, well, not really injury concerns there, but or a Kemper, I should say, or, you know, you look at the guys in Toronto where it's really an unsettled goaltender rotation with Campbell and Peter Mrazek, you target these guys. I wouldn't feel comfortable about having, you know, in Anderson by himself right now without having Raanta as the handcuff. I wouldn't be comfortable having just Jack Campbell without having Mrazek as the handcuff, you know. So I even in Boston, I don't know how much I'm comfortable having Linus Ullmark without picking up Jeremy Swayman at some point, you know, later on in the draft. But if you're taking these guys fourth or fifth round, I think you have to, no matter what, to guarantee that you get the handcuff, take their backup probably no later than about rounds 8 through 11.
Okay, so I know you guys are going to be shocked I'm saying this, but let's move away from goalies for a second. The goalie master would like to point out that there were two Buffalo Sabres drafted, and one was obviously Jack Eichel. So let's put it at one. Seattle Kraken, they won their first exhibition game. Seven Kraken players were drafted. I think that's more than were drafted in our first mock. I'm not 100% sure, but I think there was like maybe four in that one.
It was.
I'm just wondering what you guys think. Is it one of those situations where you're taking these guys just as a hope that they do well? I mean, we've seen them play one exhibition game so far, but they have some guys there that can surprise. I think the only Kraken player I took was Vince Dunn because I needed a defenseman. I figured, hey, maybe power play one, but just wondering what you guys thought since you also selected some Kraken.
I'm big on Jordan Eberle. James is rocking the Kraken jersey. He already had it delivered before their first regular season game, so some props to him for sure. But yeah, Eberle looked explosive in the preseason debut for Seattle, and I think this is going to be a really fun team to watch. And you draw parallels to Vegas. They're not going to be as good as Vegas. We keep saying that, but in terms of constructing a roster with very few holes in the entire forward group, or, I mean, they have so many guys, like even guys they added in free agency, like Johansson and Wennberg and Kelly Yarncroke. Like, these are guys that are capable top nine players. And if somebody goes down, or they're already starting the season probably without Yanni Gourde, then they're going to get Yanni Gourde back. Everybody's going to get pushed down in the lineup into more appropriate places. So this team, if they get off to a hot start, there's a chance they could get the reinforcements to sustain it. They also have a pretty solid goalie tandem. Not one that I would invest in fantasy. I had a chance to take Grubauer instead of Cam Talbot, and I viewed Minnesota as a safer team. I think you guys would agree with that. But I mean, if you lock down Philip Grubauer and then Chris Drieger later on, and you go to bat with those guys and maybe add another decent standalone somewhere in between, it could work out for you because Seattle is in the definite most favorable division in the NHL. So, yeah, I'm taking Eberle in later rounds, probably Vince Dunn as well. Those are the two guys that I'm definitely targeting. And then I would take a pass in most cases on the goalie tandem. But I think if you get into trouble, you miss the run on goalies, you take the Seattle goalie tandem. There are worse things in the world, right, guys?
Just real quick, there were only two Kraken forward drafted. It was Jared McCann and it was Eberle. So mm-hmm. In our draft, whoever is playing on that top line is out there for the picking. So you're right. Watch the first couple games the first week, and they're going to have definitely some guys in the top six, and whoever's on their top line too will probably be available.
Yeah, I'm very actually bullish on Seattle on that top line right now. I really like the look of Jared McCann skating with Eberle and Jaden Schwartz to start the season. I think that there's really a lot of sneaky value with the three of them. And I think they're all going to be very available outside of the top 150, but I could definitely see, you know, Eberle, I think, is going to be their leading scorer, but it wouldn't shock me. And I don't think it would shock anybody out of the five of us here if Jared McCann started on that top line center and held it there even after Yanni Gourde comes back from his injury. Maybe he slots in on, you know, that second line. But don't forget, they also went out and they spent $4.5 million a year for the next 3 years on Alex Wennberg. So, you know, I could see him as the number two center And I could see Gord sliding in more in that natural 3C where he played in Tampa Bay. I know during the off season and the preseason, you know, everybody was like, oh, when Gord comes back, he could be that number one. Maybe he slots in on that, you know, middle six center or middle six wing, and McCann, you know, gets that first crack at, no pun intended there, at being the number one center with Eberle and with Schwartz, and just takes it and runs. And I do think that there is some great value in that stack with Grubauer and Driedger. I did stack them, and I do love both Giordano and Vince Dunn. So I think they're, you know, a good 5 to 8 players this season that will have some very solid fantasy value from the Kraken. But the really just the goaltenders and the two top defensemen and that top line right now is all you want to be drafting if you're later in rounds with some of those guys.
I'm not as bullish on the Kraken this season. I was targeting Vince Dunn and Mark Giordano in the late rounds. Those are the two guys I wanted to draft. Giordano, I'd be happy to get no matter if he's on power play one or Vince Dunn is. It doesn't really matter because he's a safety net in fantasy. But talking about their forward group, I just am not that excited about it. I have to be completely honest here. I'm excited for the team and their debut season, yes. But in fantasy hockey, I'm really not reaching for any of these guys. Eberle, if he falls into my lap in the last round, I'll select him. But I'm going to take a pass from Seattle this season, at least in my preliminary drafts. I'll be happy to do the waiver wire play for Yarncroak or Wenberg or whoever starts off the season on a high note. Absolutely. But I can't sit here and say after that expansion draft that I walked away excited about that team in fantasy.
I agree with Robbie. I would steer clear of the Kraken for fantasy. I'll just say that. Who agrees with that? Just Robbie? I mean, you're excited about this Kraken team? I mean, I think you're getting caught up a little bit, Peter.
No, I'm excited from a fantasy standpoint that some of these guys can step into bigger roles and overachieve based on what we're thinking. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. We have them projected right for 36 wins, one behind the Flames. So that's like the fifth spot out of the 8-team division. So we're not too high on the Kraken, but I don't think they're going to be a bad team. I think they're going to expose some of those, you know, teams like even Vancouver. We saw it in the opener, Calgary, even Edmonton. I think Edmonton could run into problems when they play a team like the Kraken, more well-rounded team. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm not like saying they're going to make the playoffs, but I am excited about their depth. Like I said, we didn't even mention like Jonas Donskoy, a really quality player that they picked up from the Avalanche in the expansion draft. They have a wealth of, you know, middle road wings and centers that actually create some strong depth, sneaky depth for Seattle in their first year.
Well, the team that needs Jared McCann the most right now is actually the Pittsburgh Penguins, who are going to be without Geno Malkin now, one of the premier players in fantasy over the past decade for at least 2 months, Coach Sullivan said recently. So let's just take a 35,000-foot view here at the Pittsburgh Penguins, who have been a juggernaut in fantasy in the postseason. They have some of the most tremendous athletes in the game still on their roster. But if you're sitting here telling me that Geno Malkin, minimum 2 months on the shelf, okay, already a player with injury history, you have Crosby, who is coming off some injury concerns, some offseason surgery. Okay, that's their number one center, obviously. Beyond that, I'm not seeing a whole lot of appeal. And I think, gentlemen, now with the Pittsburgh Penguins later in drafts, typically we'd be going after Kasperi Kapanen. You'd be going off, you know, Brian Rust, some of those good wings that have returned value. Right now, I can't recommend that. And actually, Tristan Jarry is a player that just entered my do not draft list because of the Evgeny Malkin injury.
Here we go on that. Malkin, we know he has the injury history, even though he was hurt last year. It was the first time in his, 14, 15 years that he was not a point-per-game guy. Every season he had been, even in the injury seasons. He wasn't last season. To your point, I think it's going to be a struggle for the Penguins this year, especially without those two guys. I know you don't read anything, Robbie, into preseason lines, but Radim Zahorna was centering the line that Malkin usually centers, which is the second line. And, you know, it probably would be the second line because Carter would slip into the top line without Crosby. But so there you go. Zahorna is centering the second line for the Penguins. As you said, that doesn't sound so great. I know they have all the wings and they can score, but I agree with you. I think this will be a struggle for them to make the playoffs, even when those guys are back.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, they do have Jeff Carter. Remember that guy scored like 13 goals in 19 combined games for the Penguins last year. So that's maybe one of the only guys in late rounds of a deep draft that maybe gets a little bump from this. But yeah, I mean, even guys like Gensel, I took Brian Rust and he really plummeted in the draft. So that was why I took him. I took Malkin outside the top 125, you know, just kind of hoping that maybe he misses a little less time. And then because that was one team that was a little bit weaker on the center front. There were actually two teams in this draft that of mine that I waited on centers and I got some good value. I got Larkin later. I got Jack Eichel, who's a player that a lot of people are avoiding because of not only the trade, but more so the injury. You don't even know if he's going to play all year right now, but you can wait on Malkin. You could wait on Jack Eichel. You could actually get some good value if those guys end up playing some games this year. But yeah, for Pittsburgh, even Gensel, just wait an extra round. And if somebody else wants to take him, go with the more exciting DeBrincat, more exciting Nikolai Ehlers, more exciting Matthew Tkachuk, Kyle Connor, all those guys, you know, that you could get in that type of realm. I would go with now over Jake Gensel because of this rash of injuries in Pittsburgh.
Oh, I also, Petey, I was just looking at your roster and there's two centers I wanted to talk to you about. Round six and seven, you actually got Evgeny Kuznetsov in round six, which is pretty good value. On that same team, you also have Nicholas Backstrom, who's also in that injury concern. He had a procedure done, I believe, on his hip in the offseason. It was nagging last year. He still had a good season, but he might miss a little bit of time, said Coach Laviolette recently. So good strategy there by Petey. And just to frame this, there's always number one centers on good teams like Matthew Barzal. He slips in almost every fantasy draft I've seen too. I don't know why, he just does. Evgeny Kuznetsov slips, Backstrom slips, Sean Couturier of the Philadelphia Flyers slips. These are all really premier players. But to Petey's point, if you're going to go invest in wings early in the draft, you can still walk away with really two quality centers later in the draft.
Right. And you know that Kuzi or Backstrom or both are going to work out for you, right? They have Tom Wilson. They have Anthony Mantha, who actually Robbie took a little earlier than mock draft 1.0 because he's seen some time with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov, which is exciting about his ceiling once again. Remember, he's been playing on doormat teams for most of his career, and now he's playing on a team that we're still predicting to win the division by a game over the New York Islanders, a very safe top six forward group and first power play. So if Mantha's a part of it, he joins that equation where that's a player that you would reach for again. I am excited about Kuznetsov if he can, you know, kind of bounce back and put last season to rest a little bit. It was kind of like a tumultuous season for him with the time he missed in the COVID protocol and just underwhelming production wise. But take last season away. If he plays with Ovi and either Wilson or Mantha, I like that definite bounce back candidacy for Kuzi. So, yeah, that was why I took both of them. I got Backstrom much later, like outside the top 100. So that was why I did that kind of unconventional strategy, but it's kind of a handcuff in its own right in a good way, potentially for fantasy.
Yeah, I think it's a great point that Rob made. And I got a question about it on Twitter after we posted the draft last night. A fan question or a fan comment said, you know, you took Svechnikov before Aho. You know, Svechnikov went before Aho. Like, what's up, you know, with that? What's going on there? And I responded. I said, look, that team, I already had Connor McDavid at one, and I wanted to get a top winger that had dual position eligibility instead of taking, you know, a guy like Aho or another top center, because we know how deep the center position is. And that actually helped me because I was able to get Svechnikov. And then a couple of rounds later, I got Anze Kopitar, who, you know, still is probably one of the safest centers that you can have in fantasy hockey. So, you know, don't be afraid to pull the trigger on that, you know, that top defenseman or that top winger before you pull the trigger on another, you know, center if you already have a really, really good center, because there's a lot of depth at the center position. And there's a lot of dual eligibility at the center position too, once you get into the middle and later rounds. So, you know, definitely, you know, get that top center, but also make sure that you try and get you know, one of those top wings, because there's not a lot of depth on right wing or left wing outside of the top like five or seven guys.
Yeah, center depth is obviously, it's another season where there's so many guys out there. With my last pick in the 16th round for one of my teams, I took Jonathan Toews. I was kind of surprised that he lasted this long. I know he didn't play at all last season, but I'm just wondering, since you guys, Robbie, Pete, you guys are the experts here, what do you think he does this season? We know all the firepower that the Blackhawks have, but just warning, the guy hasn't played in a season. I said 16th round, you know, he scored 20 goals every year that he's been in the league except last year. So I'm just kind of wondering, where would you draft him at all? Because he almost slipped without being drafted.
I think it's kind of weird what they're doing so far with their centers in training camp. I saw Tyler Johnson's, like, people are picking him up in fantasy because he's playing a little power play and he's playing top line with Kane and DeBrincat. I don't think that's going to last. I think that it's a great security blanket that they have once Toews is playing. Remember, even a couple of years ago, they played him for one of those seasons for a good long stretch with Kane, and they played great together. We have Toews projected for 49 points, which is, some people may say, is high, but I think if he plays, he's going to get you 65 plus points. So that's kind of because of the uncertainty that we don't have him over that 60 point threshold. But all of a sudden you see him there with Kubalik on his wing and on first power play with Kane. And, you know, as much as we like Kirby Doc, and I know Robbie took him in a good spot, reached for him a little bit here, but it's a worthy reach for sure. But if Jeremy Colliton's going to be playing games with Kirby Doc and putting Tyler Johnson there, I mean, Jonathan Toews is the safer pick, I think we could all say.
He's much safer, Petey. And this is, again, going back to the conversation of, you know, who's safe in fantasy. Well, Toews is. Now, the injury concern is there this season, or the illness concern, I should say, rather. But Colliton said it's going to be a game-by-game or week-by-week approach as they head into the regular season with the players. So I would just say this, Davey, if you have two good centers, or you have some good dual-eligible guys that also have the center position in fantasy, Toews is a number three tremendous option to have on your bench, because he can really deliver that safety net for you in the regular season. I'm personally still high on Chicago, despite these kind of wonky combinations that we've seen in the preseason. I think the energy in that locker room, with a Toews coming back, with a Seth Jones inserted into that lineup, and with Marc-Andre Fleury, who looks like he's 25, still hasn't aged a day. I think that's going to be a really good team to not only watch on the Wednesday night broadcast, but also to target in fantasy, whether it's a Kubalik or Toews later in drafts, or whether you've got to reach a little bit for the DeBrincats, for the Seth Jones, and then obviously Patty Kane, who could be top five in scoring, and it wouldn't shock anybody on this panel.
Well, I was a little surprised at how early you pulled the trigger. I think it was you, Rob, on one of your teams at Kirby Doc. You I think took him at 110 or 111, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see, you know, how that pans out, because I'm not sure right now with the combinations that they've been showing us if he's going to get that shot inside the top six to start the season. I think he seems a little bit more ticketed for like a third line role to get him up to speed, and then maybe depending on how he's playing throughout the season, you know, he'll get bumped up.
Well, I was actually looking at my premier team from last year in fantasy. I got Kirill Kaprizov at 143 overall, Adam Fox at 158 overall, and Nick Suzuki at 163 overall, James. So my track record indicates that I can see this talent before it comes on the ice. And let me just say this too. Kirby Doc has the higher ceiling, I think, of a lot of these young centers in the league. Even players that were drafted above him in his own class, he could be better than. So I'm not going to sit back and wait for him to fall into my lap. I'm going to go out there and commit to that player and that team for having one last kick at the can here at a Stanley Cup championship.
Right. I don't think anyone would be surprised, like, as much as we're high on Jack Hughes, right, if Kirby Doc goes out and outscores him here. So from that same draft class, and Kako as well. I mean, Kako is like going to be available really late. We see he's lined up in the preseason so far. First preseason game didn't go too well. It was kind of those haunting memories for the Rangers of getting shut out by the Barry Trotz led Islanders. But it was Kako with Strome and Panarin, and then Lafreniere with Zibanejad and Kreider, I believe. So yeah, it's something that we're going to see how that evolves and how the jersey offense evolves. But Yeah, if you're going bold prediction, I feel like everybody's gravitating back towards Jack Hughes and Kako and the young Rangers, but Kirby Doc could certainly outscore both of those players once again.
And I just want to tee Davey up here on some late round gems before we wrap up. I will say this, guys like Trevor Zegras or Jamie Drysdale, I would wait on to the 150-ish range because Anaheim doesn't have that same caliber or that same feel as Chicago does. But Davey, I thought you did a really, you know, bang up job drafting late in the draft. Was there any guys that you had on like your must draft list?
You know, we got to the end there and I was kind of saying, this is where I would probably want to, you know, take a guy that I don't know how he's going to do, but we'll see, you know, could get some upside. I somehow got Radulov in the 15th round. I know he's hurt, but you know, he scores, you know, at least 50, 60 points, 20 goals if he's healthy, which supposedly he is. I got Claude Giroux in the 15th round. Yes, he's not the Claude Giroux of old, but he's played center. He plays left wing. He's got Cam Atkinson, you know, got some new guys there. Yandel on the power play. So to me, that was a good pick. And in the last round, I know Robbie takes no Red Wings. I took Moritz Seider. I just figured, you know what? I need a fifth defenseman. We heard some good things about this kid. So I said, let's see. But to me, in the 15th and 16th round, it was more of me taking guys that, not guys that I thought could be sleepers, but guys that I know already. Like I said, the Radulov, we know what he does, and a Giroux. I just said, I'd rather for me take a guy I know what he's done than take a guy that, you know, take a flyer on a guy and see. But Seider was, I think, the only guy I took and that, you know, is clearly isn't established yet.
Yeah, that's an interesting strategy, Davey, because I think there are a couple of guys later in the drafts. You're always you're looking for the sexier young players. But I mean, like when I went back and look, when I was doing research, I see names like Hurdle, Giroux, Phil Kessel actually putting up much closer to a point per game than I remembered them putting up from last year. And those are kind of the seasoned veteran experienced players that if you get guys of that caliber, including Jonathan Toews, that late, I mean, that could really give you such a boost in your fantasy season, you know, just having that type of depth and being able to throw in, whether you're in a weekly league or a day-to-day league. I mean, you can have insurance options like that. I mean, that's huge to have experienced players like that. So, and speaking of Philly, one of my favorite sleeper picks that I took was Joel Farabee. Looking back, he actually led the Flyers in goals last year with 20 in the shortened season and had 10 multi-point games. So we took him. Robbie and I discussed it. We actually amended our sleeper list, and he's now in the top 10 sleeper list. So don't sleep on Farabee because he's going to be playing in the top six, either with Couturier or Giroux, maybe even both. And he's only 21 years old, right? So the sky's the limit for him down the road, even if the Flyers are going to be a bumpy road once again here this season.
And then, James, I saw you got Brock Nelson late in the draft. I kind of want to go into the New York Islanders being that safe team again and having guys on the board there. Josh Bailey, Beauvillier is kind of still a sleeper name, if you will, even after a great postseason. Cal Palmieri, while he didn't do much in the regular season for the Isles, he had some goals late in the playoffs there. So I think that's another team, James, that you did a good job kind of identifying is if you're going to get value from a late round pick, you do not want to drop those guys the first week or two of the season. You want to make sure they stay on your fantasy team. And I think Brock Nelson is obviously a player that's going to remain on your team the full season.
Well, you know, you at least have to get through Brocktoberfest with him before you can drop him, because we all know what kind of a scorer he is in his career in the first month of the season. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of value. Obviously, they're not really too much of a sexy team outside of, you know, the goaltenders and Matt Barzell, Anders Lee. You know, you figure he's going to come back and he's going to be that 25-30 goal scorer on Lee's on Barzell's wing. But then you don't really know what you're going to get defensively from them. You know, I took Ryan Pulock on one of my teams late because he gets a lot of shots on goal, and he's, you know, a physical player. He just hasn't lived up to the offensive upside that everybody expects of him. Noah Dobson, I know somebody grabbed him in one of the later rounds. I think there's a lot of upside potential there if he can run that power play that is going to be featuring, you know, Palmieri and Zach Parise and Oliver Wahlstrom and, you know, Pete right before I took Brock Nelson, I think he was my last pick, took Oliver Wahlstrom, who right now is taking it to start on the third line. Barry Trotz said the other day, Kyle Palmieri is going to start on the first line with Barzell and Lee. And I'm just a little leery about that combination because Palmieri and Lee play such a similar style of game. I'd rather see them give Wahlstrom that shot on that first line top wing because he's just more of a shooter and more of a sniper instead of one of those guys that, you know, is plays physical around the net. So, you know, the Islanders, they're one of the safest teams in the NHL, but in fantasy outside of, you know, Nelson and Lee and really Brock Nelson, I'm not really sure where to go with them right now, unless you're taking an upside guy like Beauvillier or Wahlstrom thinking that they're going to break out. You know, so I would steer clear for the most part until you really kind of see what they can do outside of the goaltenders and those, you know, top two or three forwards that they have.
Right. The goaltenders, like normally you say, oh, a team's going to win 50 games. Potentially you're going to take a couple of their forwards in the first 5-6 rounds. Not so fast with the Islanders. It's just Varley and Sorokin leading their list. And then, you know, all the noise you were talking about in the middle and how Trotz doesn't always cater to fantasy production. Like, I'm more inclined to wait until the end and get either Dobson or Wahlstrom, hope that one of them gets on the power play one, and then the rest could be history. You could actually see them return value based on ADP. So I'm less interested in those middle of the road guys. Of course, Pulak, who you mentioned, he's not in our top 250, but if he's out there in a regular league that, you know, in a league that counts blocks and hits and shots and goals for a defenseman, fewer better than that guy, but standard leagues don't count blocks. So that's why you won't see Pulak in our top 250, just to make that clear.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, Davey just has three players that went undrafted that I would keep an eye on. One, Cam Atkinson. I mean, this seems like this happens every year with this guy. No one drafts him. He goes through spurts, obviously, where he scores and then he dries up. But playing in Philly, I think he's going to be rejuvenated there. Second guy, Vancouver Canucks, Vasily Podkolzin. Did I say that right? I hope so. Anyway, I like him. I think he's going to do some things for the Canucks when they, you know, when he actually plays. And the third guy, I always stay away from New Jersey Devils because I know how, you know, not great the team is, but Sharon Govich was third at rookie scoring last year behind obviously Kirill and Jason Robertson. And, you know, they signed him. They expect him to be a top six guy. I like him. He looks pretty good. He's played well. So I wouldn't say I'm drafting him, but those are three guys that I keep on my waiver wire list, James, to start the season if they're not drafted.
Yeah, I'm very high on Podkolzin. I'm interested to see where he slots in the Canucks lineup. I definitely, you know, you look at this and had there been another, you know, three or four rounds, it would have been interesting to see how it would have shaken out with taking players like, you know, Kevin Lankinen or William Karlsson. Andre Burakovsky in this mock draft went untaken, and he's a staple in the top six for the Colorado Avalanche right now. Anthony Duclair was still on the board there. Ely Tolvanen from Nashville was still on the board there, and he's potentially going to be a top line winger playing across from Philip Forsberg this year. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of value late in these drafts for guys that, you know, you probably would have expected to have been off the board just by name value and name brand, you know, four or five rounds earlier that didn't go. So, you know, keep an eye on that in those leagues that have those 20, 21, 22 round drafts. You can get a lot of value really late.
Yeah, even Philip Forsberg in our draft went 167 overall to Petey in a contract year. That's tremendous value. Now, it is fair, I will say, Petey and I discussed this off the draft. We have zero interest in Nashville from a fantasy perspective, but nonetheless, when a player with that name, value, and pedigree falls, absolutely still draft the player. I'll end by saying this. The Montreal Canadiens are kind of my New York Islanders team where late in drafts, I'd like to collect a couple of the wings or centers, whether it's Christian Dvorak. I think that's a good bench option. Josh Anderson, add to the list, Jonathan Drouin, Brendan Gallagher. Those are all guys I would not mind taking the last couple of rounds just to have as insurance. And I think going to the point of, you know, these teams where, yeah, Sharon Govich might have way higher upside, I just like the safety net a little bit more of a team like Montreal, who's going to be battle tested, who has three really solid lines. I think Sharon Govich has a higher ceiling than those guys I mentioned, but if you're looking for more safety net players, I think the Habs are a good team to key in on.
Right. The Habs should be a very competitive team, even if they're dealing with injuries to Carey Price and Mike Hoffman. I know a couple of those other guys got banged up a little bit in the playoffs. So as much as we were talking about Mike Hoffman as a deep sleeper, now that Drouin is back, great to see him back in time for training camp and playing in the top six. So, I mean, all of a sudden you start looking at Drouin as 45, 50 point potential if he's playing on the second line in Montreal. And, you know, if Hoffman's not there, that's an opportunity for Drouin to get his career back on track here offensively. So that's kind of a welcome inclusion, one of the early preseason developments that you could maybe even consider Drouin for the last round of your draft, because they went so far without him. They didn't have him for the whole playoffs and most of last regular season, but he's a high-end distributor, and he'll make an impact for them if he's in the top six.
Guys, I think 2.0 was a rousing success. For the folks listening, James Harding's pick on Kemper to win the Vezina, I checked the big board for the number on that, James. Wasn't even on the board. So that means you're getting better than 30-1 odds for him to win the Vezina, which means I'm going to go run to the betting window and place a little lettuce on Kemper, because I criticized the pick. Now I like the pick. He's not even on the board. So that's not bad. If he stays healthy, maybe he's got a shot.
You sure you read that right? He has to be on the board.
I'm telling you, it wasn't on my board. So I looked. I only checked one source, but he was not on my board, Davey.
Yeah, I was a friend of mine. He and I were having a conversation, and I told him that. And he found Kemper on, I think it's like, I think he got it at like plus 1,300 or plus 1,500. Last week to win the Vezina, and he took it. So, but yeah, I mean, you could still get really, really great odds on him, because he still doesn't have that name that you would associate with that guy who can, you know, win a Vezina, even though he's on Colorado now. But yeah, he's my preseason pick for the Vezina.
Could be an oversight from the sportsbettingdime.com, because they have Cal Peterson on the board at plus 3,000, but I can't find Kemper. So Kemper's numbers got to be better than Peterson's, right? I mean, he's on the one of the best teams in the league. So you know what? Bad source out of me. I'm still going. I'm running to the window. I'm going for Kemper because I criticized the pick. And we know what happens when Bob criticizes anything. It usually comes through and you see money signs. So who's going to put a bow on it today? Anything else from anyone? Petey's got his finger up. What do you got, Petey?
Well, I'll close it out, because one of James's first reactions after the draft was like, nobody seemed to be locking up goalie tandems. And I know he took that one away from me with the Minnesota tandem, but on other teams, I was able to get as my first two goalies. I thought it was a good strategy. Spencer Knight, I got him a little bit later than I did in Mach 1.0, and then I got Bobrovsky. They've already said Bobrovsky is going to start the season as the starter in Florida. I do think that's eventually going to change, but it makes me feel a little bit better about taking both of those guys as a stack. And then I also got my hands on the Boston tandem. So, you know, you guys went in different directions with the tandems, but I stick to my trademark, and I got those guys. So I was happy about that for sure. So James and Davey, thanks so much for the time yesterday doing the mock draft with your busy schedules, and then coming on to break it down for our audience during the best time of year, guys. Thanks again.
That was great being back on with you guys. Can't wait for the start of the season. Get the weekly waiver wire going back.
Yep.
Got a couple weeks to go. We know Davey doesn't sleep, so I got to get all my sleep this week before we really get going, guys.
For sure. And we'll have all our coverage, NHL.com/fantasy. Find our sleepers there, our projections, our rankings, our videos, all our season preview podcasts. Go back and binge listen to all of those during your free time leading up to the big day or days for your season-long draft. So for Rob Reese, James Harding, Bob Bender, Davey Satriano, Pete Jensen, thanks for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice. Talk to you next time.